Hi, this is Brian Stack from Late Night with Conan O'Brien. Welcome to ShowbizMonkeys.com. Around this town, I'm all right. Around this town, I'm all right. I mean, no consequence when you're playing with the
fire. Growing up near Chicago.
Yeah.
Well known for years as a hotbed of comedy, especially sketch and improv with Second City and Improv Olympic. Were you drawn to comedy at a young age?
I always loved comedy. I never really imagined myself doing it as much until I kind of fell into it through doing improv. It was sort of like a surprise for me when I discovered improv. And but I was always a huge comedy fan.
Yeah.
You know, growing up, Monty Python, SCTV, Peter Sellers, and you know, lots of other things.
Okay.
That people of that generation grew up with. And but I kind of fell into it. When I discovered improv, it was sort of like, I just took a class and it was like an exercise one day, and it was just sort of like, I just had no idea, you know, how much fun it was until I actually tried it one day.
Right, and then you immediately.
Yeah, it just was just so much fun. I just kind of got into it for fun initially, and then kind of it led to other things later, but it was initially just because, you know, we weren't doing it for any money or anything.
Right, right.
Yeah, but it was a lot of fun, and I did it first in Madison, Wisconsin, then started doing it in Chicago after I finished school.
Okay. So even though you grew up in Chicago, you started away from Chicago.
Yeah, strangely enough, it's kind of, I feel lucky that going back home after school was going back to Chicago, because I've always admired people that moved to Chicago to do improv or to do, and I think it takes a lot of guts and stuff. And I like to think I would have done that anyway,
right.
But I really don't know. Like I had the good luck of almost being there anyway, and
yeah.
That's probably where I would have been working anyway.
Oh yeah, well,
my day job.
That worked out quite well.
Yeah, I was kind of lucky. So,
well, moving on to the stuff you did in Chicago, obviously a lot of live sketch comedy and improv. You worked with Improv Olympic in Chicago, and later toured with Second City, right?
Yeah, I was in the touring company for 2 years, and then I was in the resident company for 2 years, where the touring company goes wherever they send you, all over the country, and then eventually. Ended up with one of the companies that just kind of stays there during the week and
does
those shows there.
You got to stay there for a couple of years.
Yeah, although touring, I got to say, like, even though it's technically considered a promotion to get to the resident company, I think I had some of my most fun time touring.
Right.
It was really a lot of fun just going.
Is it basically comedy, like being in a rock band only doing comedy, or is it?
You know, I've always fantasized about being in a band, and like, but I think it probably has a similar feel to being in kind of an indie band in the sense that you were in a van and you're just sort of all together in a van, and it wasn't fancy, but it was a lot of fun, and it was just sort of like you're around each other 95% of the time. It's off stage.
Yeah.
So, and I was lucky enough to work with people that I just loved traveling with. So,
which is always helpful.
Yeah, including my future wife, Mary.
Oh, okay. Right. So you met her then?
Well, actually I knew her, before we worked in Second City, but we worked in, a group that several of us got hired into Second City, including Kevin Dorff, who works here now, and Rachel Dratch had been in that group, and some other people, but like it was just sort of, and then I was lucky enough to work with her at Second City.
Right. So, what kind of advice would you give to young improvisers out there who probably don't think it's something they can turn into a career? Because you've obviously turned it into a career on television writing.
Oh yeah, I've been lucky enough to, although I gotta say, all the people I know who have come out of improv and ended up working and, you know, having the good luck to work in TV or whatever, they seem to have been the kind of people that they were hoping it might be a means to an end, but they really enjoyed it so much that it was an end in itself too. And I think that's the reason I think that showed in their work, and they just had, I think you can always tell when a group is having a good time.
Right.
You can always tell when performers are enjoying themselves. Like, I would tell people, I'm reluctant to give any advice because there's so many different ways to find your way. But I just tell people that if you kind of follow your gut feeling for what you think you'd enjoy doing most, then you're on the right track. Like if that's stand up, you can do stand up. If it's writing exclusively, that's great. If it's improv, and because I think you get better faster when you're having a good time. And like people here at our show come from such different backgrounds.
Right.
Some came out of writing, some came out of stand up, some came out of improv. So I think it's, there's just a lot of different ways to get into this.
Okay.
Yeah, but I think, but improv I think is great. If that is your thing, I think it's a great training ground for writing and for, you know, performing in this kind of environment, because it, a lot of it feels very improvisational and collaborative.
Oh, for sure.
You know, so, I mean, I know it's not a big surprise, but like, it's definitely just, I learned a lot in improv that I still use.
So do you find that, like, working on late night, you see a lot of the writers are performing in sketches. Yeah. Does it tend to be the ones that come from the improv background that are doing sketches? Or is it just whoever?
I think it really depends, because, like, I know some of the performers we've had here, like John Glazer and Kevin and me and Brian McCann, we came out of improv sketch background. So Brian also did stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
Jose Arroyo was a stand-up. Mike Sweeney. Yeah, so some of the people who do performing here also came out of a stand-up background. And I know there have been, you know, some great comic actors that have come out of stand-up backgrounds. So I think... We've had a little of both, you know.
Okay.
And some of the writers, the people who didn't even necessarily perform much before coming here, we really enjoy performing too. So it really just depends on what people feel comfortable doing.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So it's not just that the show is hard up for cash and they need to put the writers in, so they don't have to hire extra actors.
No, it's usually just that it feels right. Like, we usually will just try to cast we use a lot of outside actors, you just try to just find the right person for the part. And if it's someone here, great. If it's one of our friends from UCB, or if it's an actor from the more straight theatrical world, you just try to find the right person.
Okay. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, what is more satisfying for you, on the show, writing a sketch that gets a great reaction from the crowd, or getting a big laugh from performing someone else's work?
That's a good question. I'm always happy when I help to put across someone else's work, the way they kind of envisioned it. And you just you do your best to kind of serve what they had in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always really satisfying. Like, if you feel like you delivered what they wanted, I think that it's hard to compare in some ways. It is incredibly satisfying, I must say, though, when you write something, even if it's a one-line joke in a desk piece for everyone's top jokes. And if it's something you really were proud of and it happens to make it in and do well, I think that it's hard to beat that just for the sense of satisfaction from it. But I love the challenge of trying to, like, bam ass to perform in someone else's piece and just hoping to, if it comes off and they're happy with it afterwards, it is a great feeling. Like, you help kind of just fulfill what they had in mind.
Right.
You know? So that's great too.
Okay. Speaking of the characters, you've played a lot of great recurring characters on Late Night, from the traveling joke salesman to the interrupter to my personal favorite, Frankenstein.
Oh, thanks.
What's been your favorite character to play over the years?
That's a good question. I've enjoyed a lot of them for various different reasons. One of them that I've never really gotten tired of is probably the... Although I haven't gotten, not that I've gotten tired of the other ones, but
right.
I always enjoy working on and performing the interrupter sketches.
Yeah.
I usually write those with Michael Coleman, who actually originally had the concept for the character. Originally, he was just a guy who interrupted the new character's piece.
Yeah.
And it was literally just a quick interruption kind of thing. And it evolved as we worked on it into him, you know, kind of developing more and more horrible life and being gleefully okay with it. And that's one I've always enjoyed. I've always enjoyed doing the crooner goes, just because the idea of, like, pleasantly thinking about things that would be unacceptable even in his own time, you know.
Yeah, I was gonna ask that. How fun is it to come up with such horribly offensive lines and then get away with it?
It really is a lot of fun. My only concern is that, and I know you can't help this because some people are always going to misinterpret it, but, like, I always try to make it clear that his views would have even been unacceptable in his own
time. Right, right.
That he was murdered and that, you know,
that's why
no one would have put up with it. Yeah. And that I've actually been surprised at times when someone takes it at face value and says, "I hate the way he sings about women." And I'm like, and I guess I can't fault them for having that interpretation, but it certainly is the last thing in the world I ever intended.
Well, you think they'd understand it's a comedy show.
I guess that's the thing. You can't really worry about it. And, but I've been amazed at some of the things people have taken offense over the years that you've been like, oh, really? You didn't? Sometimes I always assume he's over at the top enough that people would just kind of understand that he's horrible and that that's the joke.
I guess some people.
You just never know.
Now you've worked on the show for I think around 10 years.
Yeah,
now.
A little over 10, it's hard to believe.
Do you still ever get starstruck meeting any celebrity guests or people you admire?
Oh yeah, it's funny too because sometimes it's hard not to get excited when guests that make everybody excited to hear something like Bill Murray or Harris Porter, Tom Hanks or people like Springsteen and stuff. It's hard not to get starstruck, or Neil Young when he's here,
from Winnipeg, by the way.
Oh, is he really? That's cool. Anyway. he's great. And I often find they're often like some of the nicest people in the hallway to everybody.
Okay.
They're oftentimes sometimes the people I'm most starstruck by though are people that the audience might not be all that familiar with. Like Paul Westerberg from The Replacements, when he was on, I get the feeling that maybe some of the people didn't quite know who he was. Or when Michael Palin from Monty Python was on. Some people might think of him almost like primarily as a travel guy these days or something. Yeah. But he was a huge inspiration to me when I was starting out, though. Or an author like Mark Lehner who wrote like F2 Babe or, these things that I've always gotten a lot of, that have been big inspirations for me that sometimes they'll come on and they may not be all that well known with the crowd, but they'll make me kind of starstruck.
Right.
But I'm equally starstruck by people like, Barry Amazon or something.
Okay, the big people. So it's still, it still hasn't fully sunk in that you're here. And
oh, no, yeah. I hope I never really lose that. I think I will, because it's just amazing. Like now and then it'll almost seem surreal. Like I remember when Kirk Douglas was on the show, and there's people that you don't really think of as real people. Like, you forget that, especially like an old movie star.
Oh, yeah.
You forget that they were a human being that stood in a space and took up space. And that's particularly amazing to see someone like that, or Michael Caine or Anthony Hopkins, or these people that you've seen in movies for years and, you don't think of them as real people.
Really. Yeah.
So I still get very Star Trek. Yeah.
Cool. Very cool. I'm curious, why do you think Late Night has become so successful over the years? Because not only has Conan become the most critically acclaimed of the late night talk show hosts, but so many of the writers and sketch performers like Robert Smigel, Dimitri Martin, Amy Poehler, Jack Breyer have gone on to big Hollywood success.
Oh, yeah.
Well, what do you think the formula, it's quite a successful show and breeding ground.
Yeah, I did. Well, thanks for saying that, first of all. And we've been incredibly proud to have gotten a chance to work with some of these people that have gone on to other things like Amy, and all these people from UCB that we used as almost like a repertory acting company for years. And it's funny because I know you can say hindsight's 2020, but like they always impressed me just as much back then as they do now. Like, so I was always a fan of theirs, like even then. So it's strange because I'm still a huge fan of theirs, but I'm also very happy for them. But I think some of it might be the level of the fact that our show has, we're encouraged to kind of do what we think would be fun to try.
Right.
And there's kind of a loose that we're encouraged at least to write things we want to see ourselves and to kind of play the kind of characters we want to see ourselves. And I think that goes back a lot to the spirit of the Chicago scene with Jamie and Jack and all those guys came out of and Smigel, and even though he's from New York, he worked a lot in Chicago.
Right.
And not that that's the only place that.
No, but the vibe, because it's not the two big cities.
I think the other thing about Chicago that reminds me here is that because Chicago is a bit more low profile than LA or New York, the way our show is a little more low profile than maybe a show like SNL, it's a little. You feel a little bit less scrutinized by the public and you're a little less judged based on like at SNL, I kind of feel for them sometimes because it's like people are always comparing them to that season or
right,
this season
yeah.
or the last week. And here we're sort of like, we're left alone a little bit more, I think, to kind of, and I think I think because it's such a more, SNL is such a more high profile show, they're also, the downside of that, I think, is that they're under so much more scrutiny.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and, so I think they still manage to take chances, which is great, but, I think that it's nice in some ways to be a little more low profile sometimes and just kind of feel like, oh, if you try something and it doesn't work that well, it doesn't feel like it's the end of the world.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. okay.
So,
that makes sense.
You know, there's kind of a loose experimental feel at the show. I don't know if it's how people would compare that to how it was early on or whatever. Maybe it's less, maybe it's more. It's hard to say, but we are encouraged to kind of write stuff we want to see ourselves, which is nice.
Yeah. Now, these last couple weeks, especially during your 2-week off time, there's been some more tidbits, news about Conan's move to the Tonight Show in 2009, including the word that they plan, according to NBC, they plan to keep as much of the staff as possible. Has there been much talk around the show about the move to 2009 or the move to the Tonight Show? And would you be willing to make the move out to LA to work for the Tonight Show?
I'm embarrassed to say I know about as much as as anyone. Like it's kind of like we don't really talk about
okay.
it much. I know it's a very strong possibility that, you know, that's all going to happen.
Yeah.
And, but I kind of have this, I try to kind of keep the attitude that anything could happen
okay.
and not expect anything and not be caught unexpected either. You know,
right.
kind of, but I know it's a real strong possibility that we can all end up on LA and we'll be doing the Tonight Show. So, and I've loved working with, at the show so much, and I love working with all these people so much
yeah.
that I look for myself for a very strong possibility of being out
okay.
there working with all of them. But it's hard to imagine, you know, not doing it here and not
right.
being here anymore. But I think the nice thing about being in LA was you do have a lot of friends out there now, and there's a good community of people out there, not just people you knew from Chicago, but people we knew in New York that live there now. And so I think that would make it easier to make the transition if we did it.
Right. Yeah, I want to talk about your live improv that you still do now. You still perform live, appearing in ASCAT at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater in New York. And I imagine some other stuff here and there as well.
Here and there, not nearly as much as they used to before the kids came along.
Okay.
But I usually watch the kids on Sunday night and encourage Miriam to go do it. And occasionally we'll both go down and do it. But she does it pretty much every week.
Okay, yeah.
She has a show on Saturday nights to do it at the Magna Theater, which is another nice
space. Yeah, that's the one Aaron recommended I go to actually. He was there for a while.
Yeah, it's a great space. Mm-hmm. I've done only a couple of shows there. But and I've occasionally done another show called Gravid Water. Might be Gravid Water. I mentioned it's hilarious. We've done it several times, but it's a cool show that Stephen Ruddy put together, where one actor is reading lines they've memorized from a play, and the other one's improvising.
Oh,
and
okay.
They've never heard. They have no idea what the play is or what the lines are. And I've only done the improv side of it, but it's really been fun. It's
that's a really unique concept.
Yeah, it's really. I've done stuff where people are reading out of a play that they're holding, or they'll get a page number, but I've never done a thing where an actor has literally memorized the entire scenes. And so he's done that in Chicago a little bit too. But that's a lot of fun. But I occasionally get down to ASCAT now and then. I'm hoping to do it one of these upcoming weeks. You know, if I can. But I hated missing this last one. Brian Williams did the monologue.
Right. Yeah.
Sound like a lot of fun. Yeah, but I love getting out. I always enjoy doing that show, and it's great to see all those people. And so it's kind of like a Chicago reunion, and then there's some great people we've met here in New York too.
Yeah. So. Is there something about live improv that makes you want to keep performing it, even though you've got a day job working at the show?
Oh, yeah. It's always been, I've always really enjoyed it. There's been times over the years back in Chicago where I might feel burned out for a while or something when I did it all the time, but it's always a real, I think I really appreciate it when I get a chance to do it here in town because I don't get to do it that often. And so maybe I enjoy it more for that reason because it's don't get a chance to, you know, set all that frequently, but it's all, it, in a lot of ways, it really does have a Chicago feel to it too, because of all the people.
Right.
And so it's really nice to see everybody, you know, just kind of, it is sort of like a Chicago reunion every week.
Yeah. So that's
New York friends too.
You know? That certainly gives you extra incentive to keep involved with that.
Yeah. And the crowds here are great too. They're so nice and supportive, and everybody just, there's a great energy in the room, especially with it being a lot of students and a lot of, and the show's free. So there's a great energy in the room of just like, people are just ready to have a good time and really get a sense of that. It kind of spoils you a little bit because they're so great and they're so ready to see what's going to happen.
And so
the whole room's always got a great energy for it.
I'm sure you get that sometimes on Conan as well. There are people that are big fans that would come to the show, and so you get that they're ready to have a good time as soon as they set foot in the studio.
It is great. Now, I often notice that most when we're out of town doing the show, that there's times, it might sound strange, but there's times where we almost forget that people watch the show. And like, because it almost feels like we're in this little bubble here. And it's especially nice when you go out of town and you meet all these people that don't live here, that know the show and really like Conan and might even know specific bits and say, hey, you know, or they'll mention bits that we might love ourselves, but that we never hear about, like really, like one-time things that we love. Like, I was amazed when John Mayer, the musician, was helping us out with a bit once, and he asked about a specific bit that Glazer and McKenzie, like years before, that we always loved. It was one of my personal favorites.
Which bit was it?
It was just this thing about the tea copywriters cage match.
Okay.
And it was two guys who were arguing over that one wrote the copy on the box of Celestial Season in his boxes, and one wrote the kind of lyrical copy on Bigelow Team, and they end up having a death cage match, like to the death, in a cage with a, you know, the guy with a huge leather hood presiding over it. And it was just, and I was just like, wow, it just kind of throws me when, like, you'll see someone that remembers a bit that we like that isn't even a recurring bit.
Right.
And that's always the most fun, I think, when you people mention things like that, or things that might not have even gone over with the crowd
at the time,
you know, like, but it's always nice when people know the recurring bits too. I mean, we're very appreciative of that too, but,
I remember, sometime in the past year, when Nicolas Cage mentioned when he was on the show, the Cloppies.
Yeah, that was great. Those are the best kind of things where it's just like, where you just don't see it coming.
Yeah.
And somebody just says, hey, I love Cloppies. You know, and it was just, that's our, you can't ask for better than that. I mean, that like just completely, where you just get caught off guard by that stuff.
Yeah.
Or someone will just, those are the kind of things that are particularly satisfying.
Yeah. I'm a little curious, with you married to a fellow improv comic, you mentioned Marion Pollock, how crazy is your home life? Is it a nonstop comedy show for your children?
You know, it's funny, they were like all way funnier than I am.
Okay.
like the girls, my daughters are, one's 9 and one's 5.
Okay.
And I think, you know, in terms of at home and stuff, I find them really entertaining. And I love to make them laugh if I can, but like, a lot of times Miriam and I find that the kids make us laugh like crazy. Even when they're not intended to. My youngest daughter's actually, sometimes at her funniest when she's being at her absolute worst.
Right.
And because she's just, it's so over the top that you'll just be, you try not to laugh because you're trying to be a disciplinarian. But
I guess because you come from a background in comedy, you can see the comedy in situations like that. Whereas
sometimes I always try to, but there are times where you're just like any other parent. You're just like, oh God, what am I going to do here? You know, I definitely try not to take it for granted that Miriam is so funny, but I've always, even when we were on tour, like I a lot of times just wanted to sit back and watch what everybody else was doing, like, you know, and I've always found that people I've gotten to work with so entertaining that that's been a real, I definitely don't take that for granted, and I'm really lucky to have been around all those people, and And I'm glad that Miriam still gets to perform so much and do occasional stuff on our show. It's a nice thing to be around. Even at home,
That atmosphere.
But last thing we're just like any other family, I guess the garbage disposal's not working and you try to find the humor in it, but sometimes there's just no humor to be found. It's a nice thing to be able to laugh at those things that you can.
Yeah. The last question I wanted to ask you, just because the last 6 years we've been a movie site primarily, and so we still cover movies. So I was looking in your IMDb profile and saw that you have a part in the upcoming Tina Fey movie, Baby Mama.
Oh yeah,
according to IMDb anyway.
Yeah, it's a very small part, but I had a great time shooting.
Oh, yeah, you already filmed your scenes for that?
Yeah, I just played one of the. I play a guy whose wife is in the surrogate program that Tina is also in, and I had a great time doing it. It was I'm very grateful to have gotten the chance to do it, it was really fun working with Tina and Amy again, and Jason Mantzoukas was also lovely to do stuff at UCB, and it was a big thrill just to kind of meet him for a few minutes just to meet like Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah.
She could not have been nicer. She was like incredibly nice. She was saying, and you can tell how much she really liked doing comedy.
Yeah.
She'd be like, I love doing comedy. Most people think I'm so serious all the time. But I could tell she was just having a great time.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of fun doing that. And,
being on a big budget movie set, is that
it was funny because it was really interesting just to see how everything was done, with those location shoots and the crew is just to see how everybody so professional but having a good time. They had a great crew, like all these people just while they were very serious about what they had to do, there wasn't a serious mood on the set. It was very fun.
Yeah.
And I was only there for a few days, but I had a great time. So
is that something you want to maybe expand in the future, do more performing on TV movies outside of just writing?
I would love to do out that stuff if it comes up and people think I'm right for it. Like I've done a few things here and there. Like sometimes it's hard with our hours to even pursue out that things. But luckily, our show was nice enough to let me out for a couple of days for that.
And okay.
Last year did a little good part on 30 Rock. And,
right.
And some voice, most of the stuff I've been really good has been like voiceover type stuff.
Okay.
Where you can slip in for an hour and. Yeah, but and with as you know, with those TV movie shoots, it's usually a pretty long day.
Yeah,
and they, you pretty much have to have the flexibility to get out and do something like that. But they've been really nice to let us do that occasionally. Kevin Dorff just did a part in The Office. While he's out there, so they're always really nice about it when something comes up. I've always loved doing that, and the chance to work with any of those people and. Even for a day or two,
it's
a great experience. I would love to if it comes out.
ShowbizMonkeys.com.